today on Vox Talks Economics, the surprising way that exchange rates are responding to tariffs. Welcome to another of our special episodes recorded at the CEPR Annual Symposium in Paris. My name is Tim Phillips. How do exchange rates respond when tariffs are imposed? US policy since 2018 gives us new insights into how tariff shocks are transmitted to the economy. Giancarlo Corsetti of the European University Institute and CEPR is one of the authors of a paper that explains the surprising patterns that we've seen. He joined me in Paris to talk about it. So Giancarlo, welcome back.
Thank you. Happy to be back.
We're talking about the exchange rate response to tariffs. We usually assume that if you impose tariffs, that's going to strengthen the home currency. What's the logic behind that?
Yeah, this is a conventional view rooted in many economic models.
Uh-huh.
The intuition is very simple. You put a tariff, there is a change in the relative demand for goods. There is less demand for foreign goods, so there must be a depreciation for the foreign currency, an appreciation of domestic currency to balance out. Contrasting this to the effect of an export tax or an export subsidy, because they may move and change it differently. But at the end of the day, what matters is the fact that when you curb the demand for some good, you must have a relative price adjustment. A relative price adjustment makes the domestic good more scarce. So the price of the domestic good must go up. There must be a real appreciation.
Okay, now that makes perfect sense. Has that been borne out by what's actually happened?
Well, there are different episodes. But what really made people scratch their head is the dollar behavior, both in the first Trump administration episodes between 2018-2020, but especially after Liberation Day, where the dollar went down substantially. It was a 6% against the euro in no time and generalized depreciation across the globe.
Yeah, and you really don't expect that for anything other than a really huge event. So refresh people's memory. For anyone who's been living under a rock for the past year, 2nd of April, Liberation Day, what happened?
People under the rock will read it in this storybook. What happened is the fact that there was a shocking announcement of tariff of size not seen for 100 years, like up to 25-100% across the board, which marked the end of a period in which the struggle was to liberalize, to integrate trade. So it was really a regime shift, the announcement of a new world. And the new world was not only that the US threatened or announced this enormous change in pace, but also the rest of the world was ready there with retaliation, some talking about retaliation, but thinking having different strategies. So it was a global event. Two-sided, the US announcing the end of the world and the rest of the world adapted their strategies to retaliate or adapt, counteract what was announced by the US.
And as you say, it was an event in the FX markets. If any of them had been consulting their macro textbooks, then they might have assumed that it would strengthen the dollar. But as you said, it went down 6%. Was that more or less instantly? Did it take a long time?
It was pretty quick. So there are different elements to reflect upon. First of all, the event was beyond tariff. It was really a change in the world international relations. But having said so, even if you look at tariffs, remember, there was basically widespread anticipation of retaliation. It was not unilaterally the US imposing a tariff. It was unilaterally the US announcing and everybody else counteracting. So the right comparison is not a tariff, what happened to the change rate, but a tariff retaliation, what happened to the change rate.
Uh-huh.
And once we go there, we go half the way to understand what happened. The other half of the way is the fact that you see effect in the financial market beyond the dollar. We have an increase in the interest rate on the US treasuries. So the shock was tariff retaliation, and there is a widespread effect in the financial markets beyond the dollar. So this is the picture that we need to keep in mind to understand what happened there, which people label as a reserve currency shock, a dollar shock, I would say a repricing of U.S. risk that goes not only into U.S. treasuries, but goes also into the foreign exchange, in the dollar pricing.
For obvious reasons, we're talking a lot about tariffs in the last few weeks. So for other points of view, listen to our recent episodes, What's Next for Trump's Tariffs, featuring Richard Baldwin and Gene Grossman, and Trump, Trade and AI Growth, featuring Gary Gensler. You'll find them wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, don't forget to like and subscribe.
So let's try and explain everything that happened as you see it. Now, first of all, when something like this happens, then instantly people have to give an opinion about it on television, CNBC. And did people have an easy explanation for the movement of the dollar immediately after Liberation Day?
Well, I think most of the commentators were right on target, thinking about the shock to the dollar coming from the treasuries. And you could see also from the fact that financial markets started to still investor bought dollar denominated asset. There is no way, nowhere else to go at this point. It's a liquid market. They need to use dollars. But different from the past, they started to systematically hedge against depreciation, which means that they are no longer trusting the idea that in a global crisis, the dollar would appreciate. And some of the global crisis may actually be U.S. made. So there would be the worst of possible world, no, in which you are basically naked. A naked position on the dollar may actually be a big shower, no, like cold shower coming from from a depreciation where you really need safety. No, it's not. There was a big change.
Now, you and your co-authors have formalized this in some way. Tell me a little bit about what you did. What's your intuition for formalizing this?
Well, the group that I've been working with, we didn't like the idea that the Liberation Day was a nail in the coffin of economics, saying, look, economists think that the tariff should appreciate the currency, and then we had depreciation.
They're wrong again.
Economists are wrong again. Yeah. That was actually nonsense. So what we did, we say, okay, let's look at the 2018-2020 experience, where it's more like tariff as usual. So there was tariffs that were sectoral, on, you know, like aluminum, steel, auto, washing machine. It was not that widespread. It was, you know, mostly China and then targeted to some countries.
This is how we assume tariffs are in textbooks, isn't it? Everything's the same, but one thing changes. Yeah.
So it was not yet a changing regime. So what we did a careful work on the data by looking at the announcement in the 2018-2020, which were met by retaliation, and the announcement which were not met by retaliation by other countries.
Yeah.
So, and using the standard technique on local projection, what you see very clearly is that the dollar appreciates when the tariff is unilateral, no retaliation. Depreciate when the tariff is met by retaliation. And the extent of depreciation depends on how global the retaliation is. So U.S. versus China, what you see is that when you decompose what happened to the dollar, the announcement appreciate the dollar, the retaliation by China depreciate by the same amount, almost nothing happened to the dollar.
Yeah.
When it's global, against like a wide group of countries, then the dollar tend to depreciate overall. So this for us was very important evidence because we say, look, when we compare 2025 to before, we need to do apple-to-apple comparison. 2025 was retaliated, basically.
Mm-hmm.
2018, some were retaliated, some were not. So we need to compare the case with retaliation in 2018 with the 2025. And the comparison is very useful because there is no surprise if the dollar does not strengthen when the tariff is retaliated. What was the surprise in 2025 was the fact that all the other financial market numbers started to go in different directions, especially the cost of borrowing for the U.S., which indicated a different kind of shock, like a reserve currency shock. In short, there is no ONR, the dollar is depreciated when the tariff is announced. It can happen. It makes sense that the retaliation would compensate the dollar appreciation, overcompensate. What is different is the fact that there is an engagement of the financial market repricing the risk in the U.S.
The movement on Treasury yields in 2025, that was substantial, yes?
That was substantial. And the one we can attribute specifically to the tariff shock is actually pretty significant. So if you visualize, the Treasury yields went the other way around relative to 2018. 2018, actually, that was going down after the shock tariff retaliation. In 2025, the other way around. I've been working on this idea of long-run risk in the U.S. for a long time. If you think of long-run risk, you have three markets there. There is the equity market, there is the Treasury market, and there is the dollar. Mm-hmm. For the longest time, we saw an increase in the risk in the equity market, which was compensated with high return. We saw this increase in the risk in the equity market, which fed fantastic performances. Good technology, concentration. There are many reasons why this is good performance of firms, but another part of the equity premium is anticipation of risk, was compensated by the treasuries. So the idea of the convenience yield, that is a special position of the US treasuries, you accept a lower pecuniary return. So you see increasing risk in the equity, decreasing the convenience yield. The dollar was not there, did not move much. We could not see risk in the dollar. Now we see that. The three markets together sing the same song. There is a repricing, a reassessment of long-run risk by international investors.
This repricing of risk, what does it mean if we were to explain that to someone who's worried about headlines like the end to dollar dominance? What does it actually mean?
What it means is that we are changing the way in which the balance of flow of asset and flow of goods occur at world level. So for the longest time, the US has acted like a Gulf Stream. So there was this idea of flowing asset by the US abroad in exchange for goods, absorbing the surplus from abroad. That system was self-sustained because the US could borrow without seeing the interest bill increase. What we saw in the last 10 years is a shift in the risk assessment that has created a change in the way the US is borrowing. It's borrowing much less with bonds, much more in equity. And the anticipated equity premium means that investors from all over the world are happy to hold US equities. But this means that all of a sudden, the bonanza in the equity market in the US is now shared with non-residents, which means that the US households and firms are happier with good wealth increase, but part of this slice of the wealth goes abroad. So all of a sudden, the borrowing becomes more expensive. So what you see, the system of flow of asset and goods is profoundly altered.
There is a lot more to say about this, and I get the feeling that the markets and macroeconomists are adjusting to this new world, this regime change, and beginning to internalize what that means. Does this mean that in the future that monetary policy might have to adapt to the way that the US economy is working now?
Oh, for sure. Monetary policy and fiscal policy and monetary and fiscal interaction. The situation is pretty fluid. So we don't know the way in which the fragmentation blocks will change. What more or less we know already is that this repricing of risk and this attempt to act on security concern, on this grievance narrative by the US, we give you the market, what's for us, what's in for us. All this narrative and repricing will have, as of today already, a profound effect on the composition of trade and on the composition of asset portfolios. There are factors that push for persistence of what we see, but also this persistence is dominated by uncertainty and concern. Think about the saving and investment union. The saving and investment union would be in Europe a kind of a good antidote, no, to reduce the surplus to the US. So as far as this is not there, the saving and investment union is not working well, there is a clear incentive to invest in the US. Are people happy and sort of free of concern about investing in the US? Of course not, because they know that this is a political situation that may create, for example, the concrete risk of capital controls or taxation of, or, you know, like, or blocking the payment to non-resident, which is a little bit of a funny thing. Not like the US welcome foreign direct investment, but they may be uneasy to pay back. So this concern driven basically by almost an internal political equilibrium that needs to be preserved by the administration. So they could be doing things. They could be sort of playing around with this international aspect, which makes everybody tense. So they still would like to invest. I'm much tenser now than I was like 5 years ago in doing so.
The regime has changed, but politics has short-term limits and the regime could change back. Does that mean things will ever go back to how they were before from this point of view?
It's a very complex call. They will not go back. This is the consensus. But the situation is fluid. We don't know exactly what will be there once the dust is settled on this first shock.
Giancarlo, we're going to be talking about this again, aren't we?
This is a promise and a commitment.
Thank you for talking about it today.
Thank you for having me.
That working paper is called Trading Blows: The Exchange Rate Response to Tariffs and Retaliations. The authors are Daniel Ostry, Simon Lloyd, and Giancarlo Corsetti.
Vox Talks Economics is a Talk Normal production. The assistant producer is Megan Bieber, and our editor is Andrei Zagarian. Next time on Vox Talks Economics, how well informed are young people today?